Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Mitch Albom has carved out a special place among contemporary authors with New York Times bestsellers such as Tuesdays with Maury, For One More Day, and The Five People You Meet in Heaven. The humanism and the gift of storytelling is on full display in his new novel, The First Phone Call from Heaven. It is published by Harper. It is the story of a small Midwestern town whose residents begin to get phone calls from the departed. It's a compelling novel that's equal parts mystery, love story, and an allegory about the power of hope and belief. Mitch Albom will be joining me on stage in Saratoga Springs on Friday night in a Northshire Bookstore event at 7 o'clock, which you can find out more information by going to northshire.com. Again, the title of the book is The First Phone Call from Heaven, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Mitch Albom to the Roundtable.
Thank you, Joe.
What brought you to this idea? Does this come out of The Five People You Meet in Heaven, of this idea?
No, although both books have the word heaven in them, that book, Five People, was actually all took place in heaven, in a magical, imagined heaven, and this one is very solidly on earth, just explores the idea of what would happen if we thought we were being contacted for real from heaven. And I think what brought me to it was how important the human voice is in our relationships. My mother unfortunately suffered a couple of strokes about 3 years ago and hasn't spoken since, and I've noticed in the 3 years since then, while I can see her, and she's not always sure if it's me, but I can see her, I can hug her, I can hold her hand, that's all there, but I miss her voice, you know, and I've noticed how people, when they lose other people, they don't want to erase their phone messages from their phone because they want to hear that voice. And so I started to explore the theme of, well, what if we just connected with people who were gone just by voice? Would that be enough to make us believe it was all true? And that's what happens in this little town.
And what is so compelling about the novel is that you realize that there's a second chance to talk to these people.
Well, that's what they think anyhow. And, you know, it's the mystery, as you alluded, or the thriller part of it is sort of there's one guy who's convinced that the whole thing is a hoax, and he's sort of an embittered widower who lost his wife and is now raising their 7-year-old child. And the child keeps walking around with a phone saying, "When's mommy going to call?" And so he decides to set out to prove that this is wrong. And so while people are getting these calls, but just in this town and just a handful of people, you watch how the world sort of discovers it and it kind of divides. There's half people who go, "Oh, this is the sign we've been waiting for. It's proof." And there's the other half who goes, "You've got to be crazy. You know, how could it be possible that a voice could travel from another dimension to your telephone?" And therein lies sort of, I imagine, readers of the book will sort of fall on one line or the other and then see where we take them.
Because you have this town, and we'll talk about this in a minute, about why a small town, but you have this quiet town that's overrun with media and worshipers and religious and anti-religious zealots, and all trying to stake their claim on the story, which really takes away from what is or is not actually happening.
Yeah. Well, I think that's kind of how it would happen, Joe, to be honest with you.
Sure.
Can you imagine if one little town in the world claimed that they were hearing from heaven? Wouldn't there be a stampede from around the world? They're both of believers and media, you know, debunkers, believers, zealots, and they all descend on this little town in Michigan. And, you know, to the point that the people who are getting the calls start to wake up and find people on their lawns worshiping, you know, and they're turned into deities, and some of them kind of puff up with it, and others of them run away from it because they don't want that kind of attention. So it's a good human character study in terms of, you know, when a miracle occurs, should you keep it to yourself or should you tell the world, you know, and I kind of examine that in the book.
And you really examine that whole idea of hope.
Well, hope is a pretty common theme for me. You know, I'm unabashedly hopeful, and I'm one of those people that I don't mind drama in the course of a book or heartbreak or tears, but I'd like to close it and feel a little uplifted. I've never been one of those who enjoy dark movies where you know, the bad guy wins and all there is just death and depression and destruction. I recognize that there are a lot of people to whom that's the better art, and I respect that. But for me, I always like hopeful stories. I'm a Frank Capra fan, you know, and I suppose that comes out of my writing style as well. And so throughout the book, it's hope that kind of keeps the belief that these calls are real alive, and to the point that there's one person towards the end who says, you know, does it matter if it's true or not? As long if people really believe it's true, doesn't that kind of make it so? You know, I'll give you a quick example. I talk to a lot of people who have lost people. Obviously, if you write Tuesdays with Maury or Five People You Meet in Heaven, you're going to meet a lot of people who are grieving, and I relish that. But I frequently hear stories like, oh, you know, on the one-year anniversary of my daughter's death, I was sitting in her bedroom, and I was crying on her bed, and just at that moment, a picture of her on the bureau fell over onto the ground, and I know that was her. She was sending me a message. I know it. Well, I'm sure a physicist could give you a very good explanation as to why that picture fell off at that particular moment, but it won't make a difference. To that person, it happened, and no amount of science is going to shake it. And that's what I kind of explore here. When the phone's ringing, you hear the voice of your departed loved one. Is anybody telling you that this isn't possible going to change your mind?
And what's interesting about the book and what gives it that quality of a real page-turner is that it's not just one person. It's many. It's eight people. And it's geographically confined to one town.
That's right. And then to make it even a little bit more mysterious, at one point, one of the eight people admits she was making it up,
right.
A teenage girl, and she lost a friend, and she admits that she just liked the attention. So now everybody else is called into it, and this raises another question. Well, what if a miracle happens for real somewhere, and a bunch of imitators kind of take it on, and then they're proven wrong? Does that dispel the real one, you know? So you have that other element, too. It was a lot of fun to write. You know, even as I'm talking to you, I'm smiling because I enjoyed weaving all those stories together, and I appreciate you taking the time to read it so we can talk about it that way.
It seems as though you want people to think about these things when you read it. I mean, yes, of course, it's an entertainment. You want people to have that moment and to enjoy what you're reading, but you want them to give them a little bit more as well.
I do. I think that's true, Joe, of every book that I write. I go into it with the hope that if I've done my job as best I can, people will not only enjoy the reading of it, but they'll remember it, and they'll think about it the next day, or something that was said in there, something that one of the characters said, or one of the narrative lines will come back to them. Sometimes when readers come up to me when I'm out in public or book signings or things, I'll see, like, particularly Tuesdays with Maury or Five People, the oldest books, the pages will be marked, and they'll be, you know, folded over, or there'll be lines that were underlined, and that makes me happier than anything I could imagine, because it means they really took the words to heart and they wanted to remember them later. And, you know, I guess it comes from having worked in the newspaper business for a long time. I know what it's like to write something that's going to be gone tomorrow and not thought about again because the news marches on. And when it came to writing books, I didn't want to repeat that. I wanted, if I was going to take the time and effort and the hard work that it is to write a book, I wanted them to be memorable when they were done and not just, you know, be under a birdcage like a lot of my writing has ended up. And so, you know, I guess that's what motivated me.
Yeah, as a journalist and as a sports journalist, shouldn't you be more cynical?
Well, I suppose the industry would suggest it, but, you know, I'm not typical, admittedly so. The experiences that I've had, you know, I was a musician before I was a journalist, first of all, and I kind of fell into journalism. It wasn't my life dream. I didn't grow up with ink under my fingernails, and I was never a reporter in the traditional investigative sense. You know, I didn't come from that background. I pretty quickly, when I got into journalism, I was already writing features, and then I quickly moved to columns. And so my writing was always a little bit more human and entertaining than necessarily, you know, digging to the bottom of this scandal or that one. And, you know, then I had this experience with Maury Schwartz, my college professor, that turned into the Tuesdays with Maury book. And, you know, a lot of people have said to me, well, that book changed my life. But I always say to them, well, not as much as it changed mine, you know, because
right.
It really did change my sense of direction, my sense of purpose. I had to evaluate my life, and it continues to do so. And the fact that I may still part-time write sports columns or part-time do some ESPN or things like that is more a reflection of, well, I've spent a lot of years doing it, and I hopefully have gotten half decent at it. I hate to just sort of walk away from it completely, but it isn't who I am. I'm not dyed-in-the-wool, cynical, you know, gum-chewing, sleeves rolled up, you know, I don't believe anything you say journalist. I know there are people who like that, and they serve a good purpose because they get to the bottom of a lot of things, but that's not me.
As you say, the way the book changed you, and of course in a number of ways, but I assume you wouldn't be writing the type of books that you've been writing in a fictional sense if it were not for that encounter with Maury.
No question. I really thought when I wrote Tuesdays with Maury, because I just wrote it to pay his medical bills, that I would just go back to sports writing and probably never write another book again. So everything after that was a surprise, but it really did change my whole way of thinking and my way of writing, because that book started to take me to places. You know, suddenly I was going to universities to talk to students. I was going to funeral homes. I was going to ALS centers. I was going to hospitals. And you do that for 6 years, which is how long it was until I wrote something else. And your next book is probably going to be a reflection of those kinds of experiences and thoughts. And I wrote The Five People You Meet in Heaven, which was my first novel. And I didn't know if that would work, because they always tell you, you know, you're one or the other. You're either nonfiction or you're fiction.
Right.
I took a big chance on that, but it did work. And I've been sort of doing those things ever since. But you're absolutely right. Without Tuesdays with Maury, I'm not writing any of these books.
Do you always think that you will play with and write about things that are mysterious to us, whether it's spiritual, of whether it's a heaven or a hell, that look at the things that are so unknown to us?
Probably. I think that's where my abilities and interests lie. You know, I'm not a science fiction writer. I'm not a dirty, foul mouth kind of writer. I'm no good at writing sex scenes. Detective writing and thrillers are beyond me, and there are so many people who do it so much better than I could possibly. I wouldn't even attempt it. But I do find that I spend a lot of my day sort of daydreaming and thinking about bigger picture stuff and what does this all mean. And that doesn't mean that I write books, and I don't think anybody would characterize my books, and I hope they wouldn't, as like fluffy Jonathan Livingston Siegel, you know, sort of airy diatribes on something. They're stories. They're
right.
Stories with characters, and they're entertaining, and they're magical, and they're hopefully memorable. It's just that they're a little hopeful at the end. But they are about things. You know, the previous book I wrote was The Timekeeper. That was about, you know, sort of, well, what about the person who invented time? What if he actually regretted inventing keeping track of time? Before that was a book about a nonfiction book about faith. Before that was a book about a guy who got one day back with his mother to sort of make up for everything that had happened when he was a kid. Before that was exploring sort of what might heaven actually be like when we get there. So, yeah, I guess they're big things, but they're certainly not things that people don't think about every day.
You will be joining me on stage at Northshire Bookstore event in Saratoga Springs on Friday to talk about the first phone call from heaven and your other work. So I look forward to our conversation. People can find out more information about that event by going to northshire.com, and find out how you can join us for a live book show taping at 7 o'clock on Friday night in Saratoga. In the meantime, the book is The First Phone Call from Heaven. It is published by Harper. Mitch Albom, thanks so much for joining us, and I look forward to seeing you on Friday night.
Me too, Joe. Very much so. Thanks again.
Thanks so much. Again, the title of the book, The First Phone Call from Heaven. It is published by Harper. Mitch Albom is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.